Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with the CBS World News Roundup. State-ordered investigations are underway this morning in Columbia, Tennessee, after a fire that authorities call the worst of its type in state history. 42 prisoners and visitors lost their lives yesterday when fire broke out in the Maury County Jail and toxic smoke spread through the building. Officials say Andy Zimmer, a 16-year-old fugitive from a home for mentally disturbed children in Wisconsin, has admitted that he set fire to his foam rubber padded cell. Zimmer, listed in critical condition, will be charged with arson, and the district attorney says he wants Zimmer to be tried as an adult. Today comes the postmortem, reported from Nashville by Ed Rabel.
Medical examiners will test blood samples and perform autopsies on some of the victims to determine the exact cause of death. The state fire marshal and the state corrections commissioner will be on the scene to try to learn exactly how a jail guard could drop his cell door keys and not find them for 12 minutes while screaming trapped prisoners fell one by one overcome by smoke. Officials say visitors panicked by the thick black smoke stampeded toward the door and knocked the keys out of the guard's hands. But hospitalized prisoners say the guards were reluctant to open the cell door because they feared the inmates might escape. Meanwhile, Maury County Sheriff Bill Voss says that before yesterday's fire, no fire drills had been held, and there is no fire alarm in the jail. There is room for thought, he says, but you've got to remember that this is a prison, and you don't make it easy for people to get out. Ed Rabel, CBS News, Nashville.
An express train crashed into a freight train this morning in East Germany near the Polish border and burst into flames. 27 people are listed as dead, 7 injured, most of them aboard the express. The National Association for the Advancement of Colored People is going into session today in St. Louis, and we'll hear about that from Rene Poussant.
Some 10,000 NAACP delegates are converging on St. Louis today for the start of the organization's 68th convention. The focus of attention is 75-year-old Executive Director Roy Wilkins. Wilkins is retiring after heading the NAACP for over 2 decades. At a brief news conference yesterday, Wilkins said he doesn't relish getting out of harness and will continue for several years as a consultant to the group. NAACP officials say that financially their heads are now above water, but they warn that current civil rights struggles could severely drain their reserves. A major concern at this convention will be devising strategies to combat what is described as strong northern resistance to desegregation. The brunt of that problem will fall on Wilkins' successor, 51-year-old Benjamin Hooks. A lawyer and federal communications commissioner, Hooks becomes NAACP director on August 1st. Rene Poussant, CBS News, St. Louis.
An estimated 3,000 people held a rally yesterday in Manchester, New Hampshire, to support the proposed nuclear power plant at Seabrook, a project that was the target of a mass protest rally last month. More than 1,400 people were arrested at that one. No arrests were made yesterday. Many of those attending belonged to electrical, construction, pipe fitter, and plumbing unions. Governor Meldrum Thompson, a strong advocate of the Seabrook project, addressed them and, referring to last month's protest demonstration, asked, "Why should a small minority be allowed to bring America to her knees?" The House of Representatives is preparing to vote this week on the legislative appropriations bill funding pay increases for top executive and judicial officials and members of Congress. Phil Jones reports that House Democratic leaders want just one overall vote on the bill.
If this parliamentary rule allowing only one vote is adopted, then the Congress will have its political escape. Members can vote for the pay raise and then go right back home and argue that they wanted to vote no, but had they done so, all those hardworking federal government appointees who deserve the pay raises would have been penalized. There is one other political problem for the House. In April, during debate on a budget resolution, members voted 236 to 179 to eliminate the pay raise. That was an easy vote since it was non-binding. So now the question is, if a clean vote is allowed on just the congressional pay raise, will those 236 House members vote the same way when it's for real? The moment of truth could be near. We may see whether the members put their votes where their rhetoric has been. Phil Jones, CBS News, Capitol Hill.
The question of U.S. military aid to Israel comes up again today in Congress, and Jim McManus has the story on that.
The Armed Services Committees in both houses will be looking over Mr. Carter's proposal to sell another $115 million in armored warfare vehicles to Israel, while senators listen to New York Republican Jacob Javits deliver a blistering criticism of the president's suggestions for a peaceful settlement in the Middle East. Senator Henry Jackson agrees with administration sources who say the arms sale would not damage diplomatic efforts reaching for a peace agreement.
This should give the new government, the Begin government, reassurance that there's not been a change of our commitment to the state of Israel. And I believe that's what the president's saying here with the arms sale to the Israelis.
In a prepared speech that does not mention the newly proposed arms sale, Senator Javits says the president has raised Arab hopes with talk of Israeli withdrawal from most of the occupied territories while renewing Israel's fear for its survival in his call for a Palestinian homeland. Jim McManus, CBS News, Washington.
The House Health and Environment Subcommittee opens hearings today on a measure that would put off the government's proposed ban on saccharin until further tests are made. The bill would order a one-year federal study of food additives, saccharin among them, to determine which ones might cause cancer. Last week, the House voted to withhold funds during the next 15 months for enforcement of the saccharin ban.
It's an old saying that Datsun saves. In fact, Datsuns have been saving since the days of President Kennedy. Yes, saving is nothing new for Datsun. But how you save is. Like in the new Datsun 200SX, the sporty car without a sports car price. Five-speed transmission, AM-FM stereo radio, steel-belted radial white wall tires. Yet for all its sportiness, it's EPA rated at 32 miles per gallon highway, 23 city. And even though EPA figures are estimates and your mileage could vary, the rating is much higher than the 1978 federal requirements. What's new? The cars from Datsun that save gas and are a gas to drive.
Something's gonna dawn on you.
What's new is what's at your Datsun dealer now.
The 200SX, a car that's fast becoming one of Datsun's most popular models because it's such a sporty way to save. Go try it and see all the new ways that Datsun saves.
A high-ranking dissident prelate of the Roman Catholic Church got a solemn warning today from the head of the church. We'll hear about it from Bert Quint in Rome.
Pope Paul VI appealed today to a rebel archbishop to cease activities that could cause a minor split in the Roman Catholic Church. French Archbishop Marcel Lefebvre leads a group of traditionalists who consider church reforms of the 1960s, and the Pope himself, too liberal. Despite a papal ban, he ordained a traditionalist priest in France yesterday and plans to ordain 14 more in his outlawed seminary in Switzerland Wednesday. Pope Paul has threatened to excommunicate him if he does. The Pope said today, "With a heart full of sadness, we express again the suffering which the coming unlawful ordinations cause us." He made the statement during a ceremony installing five new cardinals. Some Vatican observers see this consistory as a move by the Pope, who is nearly 80, to place one of the new cardinals, 56-year-old Giovanni Benelli, in a position to succeed him when he dies or retires. Benelli ran the day-to-day affairs of the Vatican's governing body until the Pope named him Bishop of Florence and appointed him cardinal early this month. Bert Quint, CBS News, Rome.
Today's consistory brought the number of cardinals to 137. 18 of them, however, are beyond the 8-year age limit for participation in the election of the next pope. One of the major flashpoints of Southern Africa is being discussed at the highest level today at UN headquarters in New York. Richard C. Hottlett reports.
This month's president of the Security Council, Ambassador William Barton of Canada, meets this morning with a special emissary from Mozambique who wants international help to deal with Rhodesian aggression. Marcelino dos Santos, Mozambique's number two political leader, will also see Secretary General Waldheim. The council is expected to meet in formal session tomorrow morning. Mozambique says it will raise not only Rhodesia's recent cross-border operations into its territory, but also similar attacks on the other so-called frontline countries, Zambia and Botswana. Africans see a pattern of aggression that endangers international peace. Mozambique is coming here primarily to request economic help, but there are indications that the Africans will broaden the debate to cover South Africa, which provides Rhodesia's economic lifeline. And Guinea is asking all states to give Mozambique effective assistance to repel the Rhodesian invaders, unquote, suggesting that the request for help may also have a military dimension. Richard C. Hottle at CBS News, United Nations.
Djibouti this morning became Africa's 49th independent nation after 115 years as a French colony. Djibouti is strategically located along the strait that connects the Suez Canal and the Red Sea with the Gulf of Aden and the Indian Ocean. It lacks most natural resources, however, and will have to depend on France for military support and economic aid. It's likely to become a pawn in the international power game. Western Europe, the U.S., Soviet Russia, Israel, and the Arab states all are concerned about Djibouti. This country's trade imbalance has shown a slight improvement. The Commerce Department says there was another deficit in May of $1.2 billion, but it was less than half as large as the deficit in April and was, in fact, the smallest since December of last year.